Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Oh, I love that voice, the one that tells you you're better off when you're spouting off. I mean, who thinks that? I do. I do. Good afternoon. It's Karen Cataline with you for our weekly jaunt into sanity and insanity, and it's up to you to decide which is which. Wherever you are, we're there for you. In fact, spouting off can be heard on all kinds of news stations. I'm not going to read them all because I only have an hour, but we have Blueberry, we have Double Twist, we have Short Orange. Who comes up with these names? TuneIn, Plazoo, Pocket Casts, Podbay, Podcast Directory. Oh, and one of my favorites, there's one called Women in Podcasts or something like that. Anyway, it is wonderful to put together a show live, which you can call in right now if you're listening right now. And right now is Tuesday, April 10th, 2018. That is the day that this program is being recorded live. And if you'd like to join the program and you don't even know what we're talking about yet, I hope I do. The number is toll free 888-627-6008, or you can call direct 323-744-4831. So I used to do, and I do every time I feel like it, a feature called Little Bites of Big Issues, because there's so much always going on that the biggest challenge ever is simply to decide what to talk about and how far deep into the down the rabbit hole you want to go with one topic before you switch to another. Oftentimes they're related, and then other times they're not. But I was looking, I was doing some show prep, and I looked at the Drudge Report, and under the heading Crazy in the USA, I saw three headlines. I'm not even going to talk about the story because the headline tells you the whole story. That's the great thing about Drudge. Now, a lot of people just read headlines and think they know the story. This, you don't need to know the story. But it tells you that indeed we're living in upside down times. Headline number one, man stabs boss as he's being fired. Apparently, that really happened. Headline number two, TV reporter punches competitor at the MLB, the Major League Baseball game. Wonderful. That's what we need, reporters punching baseball players. And three, owner beats dog to death, uses a GoFundMe page for the vet bills. Now, that last one, is indicative of the kind of thing that we're watching on a regular basis, or what this nice Jewish girl, sometimes not so nice, might call chutzpah. You know, that quality enshrined in a man who, having killed his mother and his father, throws himself on the mercy of the court because he's an orphan. There simply is no personal responsibility today. Now, if people choose to hold themselves accountable because they answer to a higher power, and that was last week's show about higher powers, then maybe you have someone holding themselves accountable. But you have a government today that is turning criminals into victims and law-abiding citizens into criminals. Let me give you a tease of what we're going to be talking about today, okay, before I go down another rabbit hole. After my little monologue about some of the massive things going on right now as we speak, we're going to touch on several issues, including the Mueller men and Mueller gone mad, and what are my thoughts on that, and I have, just a few. And we'll touch on a few other issues. But after the break, we're going to have a wonderful guest whom I've heard on a variety of programs on AM Talk Radio. He's good enough and kind enough to come on our program, Spouting Off. Dan Perkins, a storyteller, author, a fiction writer, but also a commentator on radical Islam. He's a contributor to The Daily Caller, The Clash Daily, Life Zet, Daily Surge, and The Hill, which is quite an array of publications. And we're going to be talking about Syria and trying to make sense of what right now a lot of people think they know what's going on. And I submit that we don't have all the facts yet. But that doesn't stop a lot of people from advocating that we do something about it. That seems to be the current modern lot in life, is that we have to do something about it before we know what's actually happening. I think that there is good reason to be a little bit circumspect and a little bit cautious about what's going on. And that's one of the reasons I decided to bring in Dan Perkins to talk to us. He knows tons, and I might disagree with him because that's what talk radio is all about. But I really look forward to hearing his thoughts and certainly his opinions. In fact, I heard him this morning on another radio station. An AM talk radio station, as I said. And so that will be a treat to have Dan Perkins with us roughly about 20 minutes or so after the hour or after our first commercial break. So Mueller's gone mad. Yesterday, Mueller's men, that's what we have to call it, they went in to... They did a personal raid, a raid on Trump's personal attorney, excuse me, Michael Cohen, his hotel room, his office, and raided his papers, took everything out. And that is pretty much what people are talking about right now as we speak, is the Mueller raid. Question, among many others, is why did they choose to do a secret raid like they did with General Flynn? Was Flynn not cooperating? No, apparently he was. Was Michael Cohen not cooperating with the Mueller witch hunt? I guess you know where I'm coming from on that. No, they weren't. So what was it done for? Why did they do it? I submit, because if I start telling you the facts in this thing, we'll never get to the commentary. And that is, it seems to me they did it for the show. They did it all for show. Because a lot of people, and that seems to be our theme today, read headlines. They never read the story or the facts. They just see that Mueller raided Trump's offices, and if you are a Trump hater, you scream bloody murder and say, yay, 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 he raided. That means we're going to get rid of Trump soon. They're going to impeach him, and we'll be done with this Trump simply because we disagree with him. If you're a Trump supporter, you look at it and say, why do they need to do that when basically they're looking for evidence of a crime that isn't a crime? They've been digging and digging and digging and digging, and now it seems that the whole Stormy Daniels thing, Donald Trump either has or did or didn't sleep with Stormy Daniels once 12 years ago, long before he even thought about or long before he ever ran for office. And yet, why has every media outlet, with the exception of Fox News, focused obsessively on Stormy Daniels? Number one, it's a hot, sexy story. It embarrasses Melania. It embarrasses the Trump family and the Trump administration. And furthermore, after all was said and done, it's all about a campaign finance violation? Is that all they have? A campaign finance violation? Well, yeah, that is pretty much all they have. And so what do? They come down like a ton of bricks. so that they can make it look like this is tantamount to murder and every other horrible crime. Notice the left never really does come down on serious crime, only on petty, stupid crime if it fits their political agenda. It's hard keeping track of this stuff, folks, because it's just so nasty. I guess I could keep talking about this Mueller thing, and I could, but I look for patterns in behavior. And every time you hear another story of going after Trump, I mean, if Trump was even a fraction of everything they've accused him of, he really would be the Antichrist. And I'm not even Christian. It's amazing to me that they throw every possible piece of linguine, that's my analogy, on the wall to see what will stick. And the reason that's important is because when they are proven to be liars and politically motivated hacks, which was proven of Mueller and all of his men, they're all corrupt. They've all been proven to be politically motivated, every last one of them. Then why would you believe what they say now? It's really the same thing as the media. There's way too many people who know in the back of their mind that the media has been caught in lie after lie after lie. And yet when the media reports something, I'm talking about these so-called deep state mainstream media like ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the typical folks, when they report something, we still pay attention without questioning the veracity of what they're reporting. And they've proven again and again that they lie and they hate Trump and they'll say anything or do anything to get Trump. So what are we to think of this Mueller madness going on? And it's Chuck Grassley, a Republican, who comes out with a statement, it would be suicide to fire Mueller. So you've got a lot of people. First of all, I don't think Trump has ever even wanted to fire Mueller. Do you know how many times the left has threatened to protest for a Mueller firing that never happened? And why? Why did they do that? Because that is what they want. This kind of treachery is better than any novel, even one that our friend Dan, who we're going to have in a little bit, could write, because it's pure treachery. There's no reason for Donald Trump to fire Mueller for several reasons. One is Mueller has succeeded in making Trump look sympathetic. I've always thought Trump was quite sympathetic. Here's a man who's done the impossible, done the extraordinary. Do I agree with everything he has done? Absolutely not. I prepared myself for that. I never thought I would agree with everything Donald Trump has done. But here's what I want to get to, just to make sure that I don't get too far off the track. All this leads up to the following. Donald Trump has accomplished more in not even a year and a half in office than Republicans and Democrats combined in the last 30 years. And we're talking about fairly objective measuring tools. The economy has taken off. Look at what the Trump haters are against. Just look. And that includes Republicans who are trying to destroy him, who are threatening him, you better not fire Mueller. I mean, do they think they really treat Trump like an idiot? And yet this man, Donald Trump, is has outsmarted them all up until now. Do I think it's going to continue? I hope so. So look at what the left and the Trump haters are actually against. They're against progress in North Korea, something neither side has been able to do. Bush kicked the can down the road. Obama couldn't stop bowing down to every country that he visited because he hated America and acted like it. And now Donald Trump has brought the unthinkable Kim Jong-un to the table. And he's brought him to the table in a weak position. Just today, China is making nicey-nice with Donald Trump. China just backed down on the threat of tariffs. Now, well, America is jumping up and down saying we hate our president, we hate our president. And I don't think that many are. I just think the media magnifies it to an enormous degree. China is now coming to the table in a weakened position. Look at what else the Trump-hating media and the Trump-hating deep state Republicans are against. They're against putting America first. Trump made it very clear. He thought it was important for a president of the United States to actually care about the United States of America. I know that's such radical thought. My God, how could we have an American president who cares about America? We can't have that, can we? Well, in order to do so, you have to care about the people already living here more than you care about the people that are trying to sneak in, like the caravan that is working its way through Mexico and claiming that it's been disbanded. Do you believe that, folks? Do you really believe that? I call me skeptical, but I don't really believe it. Plus, some of them were already interviewed and they were already, they already said they're headed for America. Why should this be any different? There's been caravans and caravans and caravans, and we have an embarrassing number of people in this country who are more concerned about foreign citizens of foreign countries coming here with no vetting whatsoever than they care about citizens who are sometimes the victim of those people coming in here unvetted. But they really love calling Trump a racist and a bigot. They call every Republican a racist and a bigot. There isn't a Republican who's not been called a racist and a bigot. You'd think that that strategy would have jumped the shark by now. And it still happens and it still goes. But they hate law enforcement, the left, and the establishment Republicans. They seem to hate law enforcement and our military. They seem to hate better trade deals. They seem to hate secure borders. Why? Because they have a globalist agenda. That's what's really going on here. And that's what's been going on for a very, very long time. How did I get from Mueller to immigration? Why? Because it's all kind of sort of related, but we have to pull this apart. Let me just go back to Mueller for a minute and point this out. Dan Bongino, a very hard-hitting commentator, often on Fox News, had a little tweet not long ago. And here's what it said. Still not rated. 1, Hillary Clinton. 2, Hillary Clinton's lawyer. 3, Jim Comey. 4, Jim Comey's lawyer. 5, Andy McCabe, who just stepped down, by the way, in disgrace before he could get his pension, although he'll get plenty. And number 6, Rod Rosenstein, who today in breaking news, it was just revealed that he signed off personally on the raid on Trump's lawyer. So that's what's been going on just 24 hours. That's what people are talking about. Is it any wonder that you have to multitask so incredibly just to be able to, you need a scorecard for some of this stuff. But it is very, very important to always go back to the facts. At least that's what I tell myself when my hair's on fire. I say, let's just take a step back and try to focus on the facts. I'll tell you someone who's going to focus on some of the facts, and yet our conclusions may or may not be different. When we come back from this break, we're going to have with us Dan Perkins, author, storyteller, commentator, and an expert on Islamic nuclear terrorism. Oh no, do we really want to go there? So stay with us when we'll have Dan Perkins. This is Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off.
I'm Elaine, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale College President Larry Arnn on the importance of the presidential oath of office.
Members of Congress and federal judges take an oath to the Constitution, but the Constitution prescribes the exact words of the oath only for the president. The American presidency was a new and powerful office created at the Constitutional Convention of 1787. Nothing like it existed in any other constitution in history. It was designed to allow certain virtues, decision, activity, secrecy, dispatch, things like that. And they were thought to be essential to executive power, especially in a crisis. But despite this immense power, the president is not so powerful as the Constitution itself. That is why presidents must pledge to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, and why it is the duty of the people to ensure that they do so.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To join the national conversation on the Constitution, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askauntemma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askauntemma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
And welcome back. This is Karen Cataline, your host for Spouting Off. I am delighted to have with us as my guest Dan Perkins, the author of the first book in his trilogy about terrorism against the United States. Oh my. And we have lots to talk about with him. His book is called The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, A Terrorist Perspective. And he is quite accomplished as a commentator and as an expert on the Middle East, and yet he's also a novelist too. Welcome to Spouting Off, Dan Perkins.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you too. Boy, it couldn't come at a better time when Syria is dominating the news. I wanted to bring in an expert to help us unpack some of what's going on. And at the break, I talked to you off air, and you said that you found a new source. You want to share that with everybody about what you had in mind?
the current assumption in Syria is that chlorine gas was used. And I put a couple of pieces together and was able to verify the second piece late this morning. The city has been under attack for such a long period of time that the city is basically rubble. And the people, in order to try and protect themselves, went into the basement of these buildings all over town.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems strange to me when I first heard last Saturday about the death toll of people inside the basements of the buildings. And then I heard that there was a possibility that it was chlorine gas. And I searched and searched and searched because I instinctively knew, but I needed to find another source. And what I found out is that chlorine gas is 2.5 times heavier than air. So when you disperse it, it tries to find the lowest point to gather. So when they released this gas, he went into the basement, I think by design.
See, that's the thing that is part of why I so much wanted to talk with you, because a lot of this not only seems strange, but we don't have all the facts, and facts are just coming out. And yet everyone is running an agenda before they have the facts. Do you find that to be so?
Oh, absolutely. I am, because of the nature of my now 4 books on terrorism, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, which is a trilogy, and I have a new book that just came out called Terrorist Gold. I pride myself on an enormous amount of research. I probably spend more time researching than I do actually writing the books, because I want to be absolutely correct. And so that helps me understand why certain things happen, and an understanding. When I heard that it was chlorine gas, I knew that there was a specific gravity, but I wasn't sure, and I finally did some research, and that it makes sense now that the reason they used that particular gas is because the people were all underground, and this will go underground following its natural specific gravity and gets in the nooks and the crannies and kills. And right now, they still don't know how many people are in those basements that might have been killed. They're still searching basements, but it's a very, very difficult, thing.
If we don't know, if we're just starting to learn facts like you just brought out, then I wonder how people are so certain they know who actually is responsible for it.
Well,
what are you thinking?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying, again, take a logical approach. You got to go back in time. Mr. Obama draws the red line in the sand, doesn't do anything, and Assad uses nerve agents on his people, and so Obama and his representatives meet with the Russians and the Syrians and say, okay, Russia, clean all that stuff out of the country. Get rid of all of the chemical weapons and the processing and take it to Russia. And so they agree. Well, last year when we have the attack again in Syria where he's using it on his people, we find out later that the representatives of the Obama administration are actually lying to us that they never verified that the Russians took any of it out of the country. And the fact that he had it indicates that at least some was not taken out by the Russians. The Russians later admitted that they didn't take hardly any of it out. So he had the weapons after he was supposed to have turned them back, used them last year. We found out about them. Now he's using them again. Now it's a whole different situation than it was last year, because you got to look at the bigger picture of the Middle East. And actually, you got to throw in, on top of that, you got to throw in Asia. And here's the connection. May the 12th, President Trump has to decide whether he's going to decertify Iran's nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have, in the Far East, we have Mr. Kim, who has been rattling the saber, threatening us day, who's now decided he wants to come to the table and talk about possibility of disarmament. And the Iranian government is going to be very concerned about what Donald Trump is going to do on the 12th of May. The North Koreans are concerned about what's going to happen when he sits down with Mr. Trump in Helsinki. And Assad is wondering what they're going to do to his country. This is probably the most important decision that Donald Trump has made so far in his presidency, and may be the most important, because if he's a paper tiger, if he pulls an Obama and doesn't do anything, then North Korea and Iran are going to change their stance when they have to come to the table to talk to Mr. Trump. If he, and my preferred reaction, which I wrote about last year after the first attack, is that he needs to take out Assad's entire rotary and fixed wing air power, destroy it all. That is his primary delivery mechanism to deliver these nerve agents and gases to his people. So we take that out. If anything comes in, we take it out. We're basically going to degrade him so that he has no air power at all. We leave the port alone because it is the one thing that the Russians want is that Syria has, and that is
the warm water port.
Right. So we don't have to tick off Mr. Putin. He'll be angry and he'll be blustery. But he did that last year, but nothing happened because he needs the port. The next thing that you have to put in the equation, the next piece to the puzzle, what do you do about the leader? Again, taking a lesson from Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Look what happened when Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, decided that Muammar Gaddafi has to go from Libya. And the administration admitted after she left office as Secretary of State, the chaos that took place and is still there in Libya was because Mrs. Clinton didn't know who the successor was going to be.
But didn't Clinton and Obama also call for a regime change in Syria? I mean, weren't they saying they wanted to get rid of Assad?
But he never. Yeah, but he also wanted a regime change in Egypt and other parts of the Middle East, Yemen, and but the point is that one thing hopefully Mr. Trump and his team has learned: you better identify who is going to replace Assad before you take out Assad. You need to know the next guy in the line. And I'm not sure anybody knows for sure who that next person is. So if you take him out, you could be in the same or worse trouble. So,
right. Dan, here's the thing I'm confused about. and I haven't decided, and I don't have the breadth of knowledge that you do. But did you happen to see Tucker Carlson last night?
I'm sorry, I did not see Tucker. I usually watch
Tucker
him,
Carlson.
My granddaughter's here, and I had to spend some time.
No, that's okay. He laid out beautifully some very reasonable doubts about the people in this country that are demanding, some very curious players who are demanding that Trump do something and go full-scale war in Syria.
John McCain.
Yes. Some of them are the usual suspects, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, but also a good deal of the left is demanding that Trump do something in Syria. And when the same deep state that has been going after Trump in every which way they could is suddenly demanding that he do something, I just don't think we have all the facts yet. And I have no love, you know, I'm a nice Jewish girl. I have no love for Assad in Syria. I just wonder if we're running off half-cocked before we know, as particularly the public knows what's really the facts on the ground.
Well, I wouldn't argue the point with you except to say to you that the question you're raising are valid questions, but you have to kind of put some facts along with the question. And that is,
sure.
If in fact was chlorine gas, then what are the suspects in the Middle East that could supply it to be used against the rebels? Well, we know that Assad's chemical capability wasn't destroyed like Obama told us it was. So he's probably the most likely suspect.
Assad?
Is it possible that... Pardon?
Yeah. Well, and you admit that our own president lied to us. So wouldn't it be curious for us to start questioning our own president why he lied to us about getting rid of weapons of mass destruction? What's going on there? I mean, we always give Obama a pass. What is going on?
I mean, I absolutely agree with you. That's a whole subject matter for another show, I think.
Right. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just saying
right. There's
an awful lot of people here that have a history of lying to us who are now saying, oh, listen to me now. That's
right,
what I'm pointing out that I'm concerned about.
There is a way in which we can test the nerve agent, the gas, verify that it's chlorine, look at its mixture, and we'll be able to deduce from that what type of apparatus was necessary, and see if we can identify any markers that will help us identify. I think that's why the president hasn't reacted yet to strike Syria. But I think that right now the likely suspect is probably Assad, because he's done it before, but he's not alone. Other leaders in the Middle East have used chemical weapons on their own people.
Yeah, is it strange that it came right after Trump said he wanted to pull out of Syria?
Strange is I don't know that I would. I'm not arguing the word with you. You can use the word strange, but I would say, what was the point? Is I guess the question. What was the point of announcing, and what was the point of the gas attack? Were they in fact related? Then you have to say, why are they related? And they're related because perhaps. The belief in the Middle East that Mr. Trump is really a paper tiger, and he will not come back a second time to attack Syria to destroy their air power.
Well, I wonder
though.
That's
why it's so important about relations in what's happening in Korea and what's going to happen in Iran.
Absolutely, and if people, you can't make such broad generalizations, but if he were thought to be a paper tiger, I don't really think North Korea and China would be coming around the way that they're coming around. I don't think I would venture to say a lot of people thought Obama was a much bigger paper tiger, and Trump is not. Trump, when he says he's going to do something, he does, or he doesn't say what he's going to do unless he's sure what he's going to do. Let me change subjects.
I just think that there's a sense of uncertainty, and let me tell you why I think the governments in Iraq, Iran, Syria, Russia, and North Korea and China they're not sure. They don't know who this Donald Trump is. They don't know who it's been characterized. Who is the new cowboy in town? So I suspect that what happened is that the relationship to the bombing or the attack on the rebels and the pronouncement by Mr. Trump that he's thinking about withdrawing because our mission to destroy ISIS is about over, I think it was not so much an attack as much as it was a test to see, do we have a paper tiger, do we have a real person here? And I'm hopeful that what the world sees, that there is a real person. Now,
what was the test to see if you have a paper tiger? The attack on the rebels? You mean, you're saying that Syria is testing Trump?
Syria, on behalf of many of the Middle Eastern nations, North Korea, is testing Mr. Trump.
I see. I just wanted to clarify that. You're just a wealth of information. What?
Too much at times, I guess. The other thing is that you mentioned was China. And this is a situation, again, where those people you were talking about who said we should attack, those same people were talking about the fact that Mr. Trump wanted to put a tariff on steel and aluminum, that we were going to launch a trade war. And 5 days ago, the reaction of the Chinese government was, we will then impose import duties and tariffs on imported goods. But what happened? The Chinese...
They're backing down. Maybe
we don't want to do that because...
The greatest deal maker that has ever been. I don't think a lot of people understand Trump's strategy.
Absolutely perfect. As my friends in Britain say, spot on. They don't understand his strategy.
And, thank God.
And in the past, if an American president had taken that first move, when the Chinese pushed back, what would he have done? He would have surrendered. He would have said,
He would have backed down in a New York second. That's what he would have done.
So, I mean, because Trump doesn't do that, all of a sudden, whether it's NAFTA or whether it's remember that the man ran on the platform that said we want free but fair trade. And before China came into the World Trade Organization under most favored nation status, they were 13% of the world's steel production. They are now 43% of the world's steel production. And that put American workers out of work. And so what Trump is doing is trying to fulfill another campaign promise to make our deals fair. And the way you make them fair is you blow them up and say, you got to come back to the table and sit down and let's talk.
And isn't it fascinating that after more than a year and a half, actually two and a half years, the Trump haters still don't get him. They just refuse to get him. And what they try to do, don't get me started. I am started. When they spend their lives trying to make him look like a dolt and a fool and an idiot and a dupe, what they do is they miss how he's calling the shots. They just don't want to admit it. He's been calling the shots all the time, but we hope Trump won't listen to this one. We hope Trump won't listen to that one. Trump is his own man, and he listens to a lot of people, but in the end, he decides what he's going to do. And sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't, but I respect that he does it. You know what? If you have a few more minutes, I didn't even get to a question I'm dying to ask you. You are such a delight. Can you stay through a break?
Sure.
Great. We're going to take a break. We have a moment with Martina, and then when we come back, I'm going to just switch things around. I can talk about the Second Amendment anytime. So I want to take advantage of this wonderful guest that we have, Dan Perkins, and talk about Arab Spring. That's what I want to talk about. So when we come back after a wonderful moment with Martina, we'll be back with author and commentator Dan Perkins right after this. Stay with us.
Hello, America. This is Dr. Martina Cartwright with A Moment of Reason. Over a year ago, chants of drain the swamp echoed throughout the United States, and today is no different. However, President Trump's recent firing of cabinet members and some of his legal team has been met with hysterical cries from the media and his detractors, calling of chaos in the White House. However, many of us understand his approach. Draining the swamp means some people have to go. President Trump is indeed a rebel, moving quickly and making decisions that many do not understand, perhaps because we as a country are so used to the traditional political approach of slow or no change. The go-along-to-get-along politician mentality is so deeply ingrained into our society that Trump is a bit of a shock to the system. Good, I say, because this refreshing approach rings of the founders' push for liberty through rapid change and dedication to self-reliance. The loudest complainers appear to be those that carry a victim mentality and are content with surrendering their personal liberties. Let them complain. Mr. Trump has the mind of an executive, dismissing those who either do not support his agenda or those who have subpar performance. He is also fast to make change in light of new information or in situations that require a fresh approach. Anyone who's worked in a private sector job or has run a business knows that rapid change is essential to business survival. The wrong person in the job can be detrimental to the business and kills employee morale. What some view as White House chaos, others view as a normal day in the private sector. It's about time the country was run like a successful business rather than a plodding bureaucracy. This has been Dr. Martina Cartwright, your common sense professor, with A Moment of Reason. And now back to the show.
Welcome back. This is Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio, Station 1. I had to make a quick switch, and I decided that we have such an eloquent and distinguished guest, Dan Perkins, author of 4 books, and we're going to find out more about what he does. I wanted to ask you, Dan, in our last minutes together, we have about 9 or 10 minutes to talk still, okay. And I'm glad. Thank you for staying with us. Another suspicion, and you know, I am by nature a skeptic, but I am not a conspiracy theorist. But after 8 years of the last president, it's easy to get that way. Okay.
Sure.
And the whole Arab Spring was, to me, I'll just tell you what I thought, and then I would love for you to tell us any inside stuff. That was sold to the American people as something terrific, wonderful, and marvelous. And yet, it seemed as if Obama's entire Middle East policy was to topple moderate leaders, none of which are very, very good, and replace them with much more diabolical leaders, all of whom hate America. Am I off base here?
Well, you're not off base. You just need to add one other further description.
Uh-huh.
Muslim.
Oh, well, yeah.
Muslim.
Yeah, and the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yes.
Right?
And it's interesting, the country that where this all happened, being Egypt, the people ultimately, relatively quickly, rejected
the
Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Rejected it. Now, there are people, Coptic Christians, who paid an enormous price with their lives in Egypt and in other parts of the Middle East where the Muslims are. Again, this is something I have a really good friend who I do occasionally, we do radio together on another syndicated network. And he said something to me one time. We were talking about what happened to the Christians. And he said, he's a converted Muslim himself and an Iranian. And he said to me, Dan, you have to understand that the greatest fear of the Muslim leadership is Christianity. It is where Muslims who are abandoning their faith are going, is to Christianity. And so the destruction of the Christians in the Middle East by the Muslims is by design, because they're trying to stop the conversion to Christianity.
Yeah, what a drastic difference in religious ideology. Mm-hmm. One turns the other cheek and the other slaps it, right?
This is the other thing. In the first book in the trilogy, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, A Terrorist Perspective, mm-hmm. I wrote the book from a terrorist perspective because I believe and still believe today that the American people know practically nothing about Islam, either the Quran or Sharia law. They know nothing
about it.
I've asked that question thousands of times on radio shows like yours, and the best I've ever heard is maybe 3 or 4% of the audience have read some part of either the Quran and the Sharia law. And what they don't understand is that what has made this country, America, what it was, its differentiation, was to be able to bring people from all over the world and assimilate them together in a common culture called America. But when the Muslim walks across the border into the United States, his laws, his religious laws, forbid him or her to assimilate with Christians and Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So when Muslims come into the United States, they build their own enclave. They separate themselves from the rest of the country. They will never assimilate into our culture, so they're dividing our country. Right now, France is about 10% Muslim, and they have enormous amount of power, but they've done it through enclaves where they have created what they call over in Europe no-go zones, and they're building more and more and more. So they're virtually taking over the country of France by the enclaves that they're building and staying within using their own laws. They don't follow French law, and they don't pay attention to anything that's going on with the French government. They're slowly taking over the country. My first children's book, Peter the Little Irish Seal, which is based on Celtic mythology dating back to the 5th century, was stimulated, the idea was stimulated by my youngest son and his wife, who was Irish, who went to Ireland. And they would come back to me and say, Dad, my in-laws in Dublin are afraid that the Muslims are coming in and they're trying to change our culture, our history, and our heritage to the Muslim base, no longer Celtic. And so I wrote this story about the Selkie, which is a mythological character, to preserve in writing part of Celtic history.
Well, it could be said that the Muslim culture, which is both a political ideology and a religion and all the rest, is using its human capital as weapons in other countries, couldn't it?
I'm sorry, we got interrupted. Could you say that one more time?
I say it could be said that Muslim countries are using their human capital as weapons.
Oh,
in
absolutely.
Other countries to build
sure.
Enclaves, just and that seems to be the case again and again and again, to say nothing of the fact that they also use our political correct nonsense against us by claiming mm-hmm. to be victims, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. How much time do we have left?
We have about 5 minutes.
Okay.
I think.
Can I change the subject a little bit for you?
You betcha.
Okay. I made a prediction 2 months ago on the victim that will be the Democratic Party presidential nominee in 2020.
The victim.
Yep. Remember, the Democratic Party is the party of victims.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Blacks, Hispanics, transgenders, you know.
Yes.
Homosexuals, gays. It's
and now
it's the party of
women
victims.
Women are the new victim group, you know.
Right. So,
right.
So do you know who that person is? What that victim is going to be? The most prominent victim who will be the Democratic nominee? And I'll give you the two caveats why. Do you know who it is?
Well, it's going to, I don't know. I could guess a lot of people. People like Kamala Harris or who? Oh, wait.
Hello?
A Muslim? Is it a Muslim?
No.
Okay. Who is
it? At least I don't think she is.
It's a female.
The victim that I think is going to be the nominee for president of the Democratic Party in 2020 is Hillary Clinton. She is the ultimate victim.
Uh-huh.
She was entitled to the presidency, and it was stolen from her by the Russians and Donald Trump.
Mm.
She won the popular vote, so she de facto should get, this is what there's happening out there. Did she shut down her election committee after she lost the campaign? No.
No.
Is she out raising money and making speeches all over the world?
But
yes.
Dan, Democrats have been trying desperately to distance themselves from her because she looks like she's got a screw loose. I mean, she has absolutely made an enormous fool of herself, and they may be stuck with her. You're absolutely right. They may be stuck with her.
I don't see anybody out there. There is, if I said to you right now, Who do you think is the leader of the Democratic Party? Who would it be?
Barack Obama.
Nancy Pelosi?
No.
Who can't remember her name? Chuck Schumer?
Well, Barack Obama is the leader of the Democrat Party at the moment.
But he's not leading. He's not doing anything. He's not leading.
He's doing a lot behind the scenes. He's also lawyering up pretty good, but I think he's going to get a pass. He always gets a pass.
Right.
Listen,
so I think that she's working to keep Mueller engaged until the primaries and before the general election in 2020.
She can't even walk. She can't even walk upright. You're really telling me? And then she'll be something.
Neither could Roosevelt.
Not only that, but she has so much on these people. I'm going to take an extra 2 minutes because you are a delightful guest. Tell us about, number one, how people can get a hold of you, your new project, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, because people need to hear about that. And first tell them how they can get a hold of you.
Well, all of my books are available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or can be ordered through your local bookstores.
Okay.
There are four books. The trilogy is The Brotherhood of the Red Nile, three books. Terrorist Perspective, America Rebuilds, and America Responds. The fourth book, which is called Ted Baker and Terrorist Gold, has been out about 2 months and is now across close to 600,000 page views.
You're a target for Facebook and Twitter, right? You've risen to be enough of it. You're success enough to be a target now. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I told you about Peter the Little Irish Seal, which is my first children's book.
The second
children's book is called Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? And it's a story about two little girls, 9 and 12 years of age, who have a special gift to find things that are lost. And they decide to start a business to help people because they work all over the neighborhood finding things that are lost. And they form a company called H&C Hudson and Charlotte Lost and Found. If you lose it, we can find it. They convince their dads to build a treehouse office in the backyard. And they plaster the downtown with handmade posters and handbills. They go back, wait for somebody to come in. And nobody does the first week, second week, third week. And in the fourth week, there's a knock at the door. And there's a little boy standing there, and he says, "My dad says the reason why my Grammy can't remember me is that she's lost her memory. And your handbill says you find things that are lost. Can you find my Grammy's memory?"
Oh.
And it's a story about how these two little detectives learn and understand what dementia is and what it means and how they help James retain the memory of his grandmother, because they can't find her memory. And then at the back of the book are 12 activities that families can do starting today to begin to preserve the memories of grandma and grandpa or aunts and uncles. And it got 183,000 page views in its first 4 weeks.
That is great. You are such a fascinating man. I would love to have you back. We didn't even get to talk about your Songs and Stories for Soldiers. So say your website again. We're going to have to end it right there. I thought it was like Dan at, well, just give us your website and your Twitter handle one more time. Hello? We lost him. We lost him.
I'm sorry. DanPerkins.guru. And Dan's Beak is my Twitter handle.
Dan's Beak with an S in the middle?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining us, Dan Perkins. You are just a wealth of information. Thanks for being our guest. And that'll do it for us on Spouting Off. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so at my website, www.karencataline.com. If you know how to spell the name, you can go to Twitter, Facebook, and all those social media sites that the left controls. Thanks to Doug, my producer. And tune in next week when there's going to be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.